This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Now, normally I open each hour or each segment with a look at how a connection with that guest has been formed, but today I'm going to let Ken Burns explain it for us. You know Ken Burns as an award-winning documentary filmmaker. The Civil War, baseball, jazz, I can't possibly name them all, but surely you know his work, and now he's turned his attention to Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. He has a new film and a new project that goes with it. Here's Ken Burns on his trailer for the film, explaining what sparked his latest passion.
I live in a tiny village in New Hampshire, and across the river in Putney, Vermont, is the Greenwood School, a school for 50 boys with learning disabilities. Every November, the school has this tradition of charging the boys with memorizing the Gettysburg Address, and then around Lincoln's birthday, doing a public recital of that address.
47 years ago.
47 years ago.
Now, you and I can memorize it with some effort, but it's a minefield for these boys. And what they do is so heroic that the first time I was asked to be a judge, I just wept and said, this should be a film.
All the students have done it in the years since we've been a school. It's an example of hard work and perseverance. It's not an easy thing to do to get up and speak in public and certainly recite something from memory.
We filmed the assignment and then embedded with two camera people and a sound person for 3 months every day the school was open. And we watched them memorize it. We learned the backstories.
Dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
And then on February 15th, filmed their incredibly moving public recital of this. And I think there's something about these kids that is so moving and so inspirational that they do something that's really unbelievably tough, which is memorize some of the best words ever spoken.
On this
continent, Indian nation.
And our idea then began to grow, that not only could we make a film that would be really different from us, but the idea that if they can do it, we all can do it. What if we all decided, from president to pauper, to learn the Gettysburg Address, to be connected or reconnected to the most stirring words ever spoken? So here's the idea. First we thought, wow, now let's challenge all school kids. And then it was like, why? Why not challenge all Americans? So if you're interested in participating in what could be the largest mass memorization in all of history, you go to pbs.org, the address, and follow the prompts. And it allows your class, your friends, your family to memorize and upload your video of what you've done. And this could be a terrific moment for all of us. The kind of medicine that it was for the United States at the time of the Civil War, the kind of medicine it could be for us today.
And that's just a taste. Ken Burns joins us now live. Good afternoon, Ken.
Hi, how are you today? Thanks for having me.
Well, a thrill to have you, Ken. And you know the Gettysburg Address was fewer than 300 words, less than 3 minutes long. And as you say, some of the most powerful words ever spoken. And yet our modern politicians of every ilk now feel compelled to speak for an hour or more, saying very little. I wonder, have we learned nothing from history, Ken?
Well, it's interesting. It's more a question of the very medium that we're using at this moment, our media culture, that I think makes it so difficult to be heard. There are short speeches, and one worries today that Lincoln's speech would even be noticed. C-SPAN might cover it, but in the midst of other stuff going on, we might miss something that was, as you suggest, 2 minutes long and less than 300 words. So, you know, I think we're fortunate that we had at the sort of climax of the greatest cataclysm in American history, our Civil War, such priceless words spoken that we can hold to them still. You know, when the first anniversary of 9/11 came around, there was, besides the desperately sad list of the dead, very few English words spoken. But among those spoken was the Gettysburg Address, and it was... As I said in that trailer, it was medicine then for us. Of course, the Gettysburg Address has nothing to do with 9/11, but the words remind us of the cohesion we desperately seek. So rather than maybe sort of dump it all on the politicians of today, maybe we ought to say what we all lack, since the politicians are us, is that sense of cohesion. And Lincoln was able to at least give words out into posterity that we cling to today like a life raft. And I was so struck by the power of the words again and again and again.
And as you say, if it were spoken today, it might not get the attention. It might not make a splash even on cable news. And even at the time, it wasn't perfectly received, nor was it the headliner speech of the day, was it?
No, first of all, it was not. The president was invited as a kind of an afterthought to give what was called, quote, a few appropriate remarks.
An afterthought.
The main speaker was the noted orator of the day, Edward Everett, who spoke for not quite 2 hours. He was an amazing speaker, and his speech is amazing, and most of his speeches were where people flocked to hear, because he could establish the themes and go off and great, wonderful tangents and always return, often without notes, to the central things. People would stop and applause in the middle of the speech just because, like a jazz musician, he had gone far from the theme, had returned to it, and people would just gasp with the oratorical skill. Then Lincoln came up and gave these two-minute remarks. The Chicago Times said, "The cheek of every American must tingle with shame as they read the silly, flat, dishwatery utterances of the man who has to be pointed out to intelligent foreigners as the President of the United States." So as we wring our hands about today's current political situation, you know that even when the greatest address was given, there was still the same yes but, in kind of the same kind of stupid thing.
Well, and here we are with a film and a project, and I want to talk about the film, and we're going to get into all of this here, but obviously you're well known for your work, and I suspect you are more persuasive than many filmmakers could be, and yet it is still not easy to convince parents of children with learning disabilities to let you into their lives with cameras to tell their story. Why do you think they said yes?
I am so grateful that they did. I think there is a sense, and one of the school psychologists in the film says it very well at one point, and it brings you up short if you think about it, that we like to think of ourselves as a sort of a country that celebrates difference, that celebrates individuality. But in fact, we don't. We actually want everybody to more or less conform. And when you have kids with learning differences, as these kids do, ADHD, ADD, executive function, dyslexia, a whole alphabet soup of various things, there's an ostracization that takes place from the earliest part of their lives. And school is, of course, the battleground. And so to find a school like Greenwood, and there are hundreds of them around the country, but to find one that is as good as Greenwood is, that can sort of pluck your son out of this, and it is all for boys, pluck your son out of this terrible situation and give them, as Lincoln would say, as Lincoln did say in the Gettysburg Address, a new birth of freedom, is really amazing to watch. And I can only think that the parents decided just to trust us. We made ourselves part of their family. It's a tiny school, 50 kids, 33 staff for those 50 kids. It's a boarding school. They come from all over the world, from Saudi Arabia, from Singapore, from Indonesia, from next door, the next town over in Vermont. But they board there, and there's a kind of intimacy that we felt we needed to participate in. And I spent 10 years circling this, thinking, this is a style in filmmaking called cinema verite, where there's no narration, there's no music, you just film what's going on. And this is sort of partial verite, this film. There's historical context. We do have some music. But we just embedded ourselves and made ourselves sort of flies on the wall and watched good things and bad things and boring things and exciting things and everything over 300 hours between November 27th, when they got their assignment, 2012, to February 13th, and then later on we filmed them going to Gettysburg in May. And it was a revelation. It was principally two of our interns who volunteered their time. We had no funding at that time, and an assistant of mine who I turned into a sound man and a producer, Chris Darling, and the three of them spent every single day the school was open, and some when the school was closed, filming and recording and watching, and then it was our huge task with the editor, Craig Mellish, to distill it into an hour and 20 minutes.
We're thrilled to say Ken Burns' The Address airs on WXXI-TV on Tuesday, April 15th. Tuesday, April 15th. And if you want to talk to Ken, the number to call, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Now, Ken, it's one thing to memorize a collection of words, and obviously it's quite another to absorb yourself with the meaning of the words. And I wonder, especially as you study people and you've seen adults, children across the country memorizing and reciting, is there a danger that simply memorizing this address desensitizes us to its significance?
No, I don't think so. You know, I think that was the complaint, that there was something, what was it about rote learning that was so bad that, you know, people, what was the purpose of it? My dad had, who, by the way, grew up in Rochester, in his schools, he memorized all the time. He had hours and hours of poems and portions of Shakespearean plays and the Gettysburg Address and lots of stuff on his hard drive. And his son, his oldest son, yours truly, has maybe a half an hour on his hard drive. And I don't like that. And my kids have even less in a society that values this just all-consuming and distracting present. I think it's great, and I think this film will prove your excellent question. And not only the film, but the programmatic outreach that has attended this film, which is these kids have inhaled this thing, not only memorizing it, but getting its meaning. They're studying it in their history classes. They're understanding what words mean. They're expanding their vocabulary. They're overcoming many of the differences that they do have by virtue of memorizing this. But then by asking the country to do it, people have sent us in the most amazing, wonderful renditions. The U.S. soccer team has done a mashup. We've gotten all the living presidents. We've got Bill O'Reilly and Rachel Maddow in the same mashup. We have Marco Rubio and Nancy Pelosi. We've got schools in Alabama and schools in Utah. Apparently an entire stadium at halftime recited it in unison. Where the Mayo Clinic is sending us a mash class. So are ESPN anchors. I mean, all of a sudden, these barriers and boundaries that we put up for ourselves in our media culture, red state or blue state, left or right, rich or poor, black or white, young or old, gay or straight, whatever it is, whatever distinction, begins to dissolve. And that's what I've wanted to do with all my films. People say, who'd you make that film for? And I said, everybody. They say, oh, come on, you know, you must have a target audience. And they say, well, PBS, you know, it's more blue state. And I said, actually, no, it isn't. In Alaska and Oklahoma and Arkansas and West Virginia, the reddest of the reddest states, people depend on their public broadcasting, both radio and television, as lifelines. It's sometimes the only signal that they can get. And it's not just for our superb scheduling and programming, but it's continuing education, classrooms of the air, crop reports, lifetime learning things, homeland security reports. I mean, this is a huge thing, and people respond, and that's what I love, not only to my films, but to this challenge and all across the country. And if you go to learntheaddress.org, you'll see pages upon pages of people who've recorded it, and you can watch your neighbors, and you can watch famous people. You can see Stephen Colbert do a hilarious one. You can see lots of wonderful people saying, you know what, this is worth doing it.
Well, if you don't mind, Ken, that's a great segue there. LearnTheAddress.org is the website that he's talking about. And we've got a couple of clips. One, the obvious one, I do want, and we're not going to do the whole address because you can go there and see so many great examples. But he mentioned Stephen Colbert. And if you're wondering how that sounds, the first 30 seconds or so, here it is.
47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty, and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war.
Stephen Colbert, and you'll have to trust me when I tell you that if you can't see what he's doing at the time, he's even better when you see the visual of it.
You definitely have to see it. And what a great thing. I mean, quite often in public broadcasting, we do come off as a little bit too earnest, or we get too serious or too self-involved with our stuff. You know, there's a great spoof of us on, I think it's Saturday Night Live, which are the NPR ladies. And
yeah.
But what's so nice about Stephen is he gave us the gift of comedy, just as this is a hugely serious and important speech, the most important speech I believe ever given in American history, in the middle of the most important event, which is not funny in any way, that is to say 750,000 Americans, you know, well over 2%, almost 3% of the population, dying over the fundamental hypocrisies and themes of American history, race and the existence of slavery in a country that had declared that all men are created equal. I don't need to tell the good citizens of Rochester, New York, who gave refuge and home to Frederick Douglass as well as Susan B. Anthony and others in movements that are alike about those struggles. But it's good just to inhale and have a good laugh, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, and I think Stephen would tell you as well, and I'm sure he has told you, Ken, that he would never do anything to make light of it. I think that I think the way you describe it there is perfect, and there are so many other beautiful ones there. We also, to be clear to our listeners today, this isn't just about the big names. As Ken has said, everybody across the country. So in conjunction with Ken Burns' Learn the Address Project, WXXI is inviting kids and adults of all ages to learn the 272-word address. Easy. We'd love for our listeners today to recite the address. You can do so right now. Go to WXXI.org/the address. That's our local way of getting involved, and you can upload your videos there. We're going to be sharing them in the weeks and months to come. And so, Ken, you've seen so many examples. What really stands out to you doing so many of them? Do they start to blur together, or do some still stand out for you?
No, you know what? It goes back to your earlier question about meaning. When you have this exercise of memorization, I suppose if you're bored with it and it's an assignment or you take it as that, then there will be no meaning in the words. But almost everyone that I've seen record and upload, however flawed the reading might be, however halting it might be, they're invested in the meaning that I believe Lincoln had, or in their own interpretation of what that meaning is. And so what you see time after time, and every day we just go and scroll and try to look, you know, spend an hour or so and look at the new ones that have been added. It's amazing, and it brings tears to my eyes that people have invested this time. We're supposedly a people with the attention span of gnats, and this takes a little bit of time. You know, you'll get the version if you want to record the most familiar version. It's the Bliss, B-L-I-S-S version, which is the 272. You tape it to your mirror in the morning and you recite it, and you do a couple sentences and you keep going and you'll get it. And you'll curse me for a few days and then you'll have it and you'll feel like you own it. And the great thing is that the boys that do it each year at the Greenwood School have remembered it their whole lives. And it becomes this kind of thing that they hold, this talisman. And it can be for all of us too. These are hugely important words. Lincoln's rhetoric, Lincoln's poetry is so stunning. There's no proper names in this address. It's doubling down on the Declaration of Independence. You know, 47 years ago, nobody spoke that way, not even at that time. He was just trying to say, look, it's only been 87 years since the founding of the Republic. But when we founded our Republic with the Declaration of Independence, declaring that all men are created equal, it wasn't true. So here we are, 47 years later, in, you know, after the greatest battle that has ever taken place in American soil, Gettysburg. You know, there are nearly 11,000 dead. There are 57,000 casualties. There's almost 200,000 soldiers engaged in this tiny town of less than 2,500. And here we are, 4 months later, trying to make sense of all of the death and all of the suffering by dedicating a cemetery, that we really do mean this. We really do mean that all men are created equal, that we do believe, we want to double down on that idea, but also the idea that government of, by, and for the people shouldn't perish from the earth, that we're emerging from this civil war This was the turning point. God only knows whether he understood that even more Americans would die after his words than had died before it in the Civil War, before it would finally be over. But this was the turning point. This was the climax. This was the sense that the South's effort at secession was doomed.
Now, filmmaker Ken Burns joining us, and we've got about 15 more minutes with Ken talking about his project, The Address, the film, on Tuesday, April 15th on WXXI-TV, learntheaddress.org, WXXI.org/theaddress. And then we want to bring in Stephen in Rochester, who has his own wonderful story to share. Stephen, hello.
Hello. Hi, I'm here sitting next to my grandmother. My job with Medical Solutions to take care of her. She is 100 years old, and she has memorized the address. Her grandfather fought at Gettysburg. I can put her on and have her say what she remembers, although she has some Alzheimer's. And oh, there she goes.
Point upon this continent, a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to sculptures and all men are created God. It's altogether fitting and proper that way you do this, but in the law of the sense we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground, the brave men living and dead who struggle here are consecrated. Far, 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 that old is each rat.
Wow, 100 okay. years old, Stephen.
100 on Pearl Harbor Day, believe it or not.
Well, we thank you for the call, and Ken, what's that mean to you when you hear you had children in the film? Now you've got a 100-year-old woman there, and still shocked.
This is exactly what we do in this country, isn't it? Is that we're still relatively young. We can be connected to people who have memories of people who fought in the Battle of Gettysburg. What great gifts that is to give on to our children, and how great that we don't abandon. Those kids who start off with learning differences. You know, a lot of people say learning disabilities, but these are just different. You know, if you run down the list of Fortune 500 CEOs, there is a disproportionate number of them that have learning differences, and that's because they've had to learn new strategies that the rest of us haven't to cope, to get by, to learn how to read, to learn how to add, to figure out how to go through life, to communicate. And these have been novel enough strategies that have set them in good stead. One thinks of just the first example that comes to mind is Charles Schwab, who is famously dyslexic, but is at the head of one of the biggest financial services companies in the United States. And we have given space, I think in large part to the sacrifices made by those at Gettysburg and other places. The gentleman Stephen brought up, Pearl Harbor, we think about there and D-Day, so that we might remember, as Dr. King said, the true meaning of our creed, which is all men are created equal. And we don't mean men now. We mean everybody.
Let's get to Jane in the city of Rochester. Jane, you're on with Ken Burns.
Yes. When I was in fourth grade, C student, I memorized the Gettysburg Address because there was such music and poetry in it, and that when you hear it, I feel like it has to be read out loud to get the poetry and the music. And it just went so deep. And I feel like comparing him to Martin King in the same way. It's almost irresistible. You must stop and listen and absorb it. It's so deep. So I'm just saying that it is true poetry that seems to really touch and make itself prominent. Thank you.
Jane, thank you. Ken, do you agree that poetry needs to be read out loud to be appreciated?
Absolutely, and Jane hit the nail right on the head. This is what it does. It opens us up. Look, we like to do things in unison. You know, we like to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game at the ballpark. We like to sing in church. We like to sing Christmas carols. Whatever it is, we like to do things in unison because it brings us together. But part of it is just taking words on the page and making them something else, making them, as she said, music. And this is what is at the heart of this. If we say things out loud, it's a lot better than if you just read it on the page. Something is altered. You hear the music. You hear the poetry of it. And it has a huge, huge, profound effect on people. When, for example, if you are to go, and you can just go right online right away and look up Dylan Thomas, the great Welsh poet, and have him read A Child's Christmas in the Wales or Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night, and hear the poet read his own words, it suddenly opens up in a way that it just reading it on the page could never do. And I find this all the time in my own work, because in addition to our third-person narrators, which is a function of documentaries, we've introduced over the last 40 years first-person voices that read diaries and journals and love letters and things like that. So this fall, we're releasing a major series very much in the style of most of my work on the Roosevelts, Theodore Franklin and Eleanor. And we were able to get access to some intimate letters and diaries and journals and memoirs of all three of those great individuals. And Eleanor Roosevelt, whose voice we think we know from newsreels, that sort of high-pitched voice, we asked Meryl Streep to read, and she does. And I watched scholars who had spent their entire lives studying Eleanor Roosevelt burst into tears, because they were suddenly hearing the words off the page. It's no longer, you know, cold type on a, you know, cold print. It's suddenly alive and breathing, brought to life by one of the great actors of, you know, the last 100 years. And it's a revelation to hear her. And many of them would gasp at screenings thinking, I've just heard her, and then realize that it wasn't. It was somebody reading her voice.
Wow. Wow. Mike in Rochester, you're on with Ken Burns. Hello.
Ken, I want to thank you for all your history contributions that you've made along the way. I met you in Seneca Falls when you had the suffrage film released.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you, have you heard of Sheridan's Ride, a famous poem that was published around the same time as the Gettysburg Address? And it's considered to have helped Lincoln get reelected. And it's about a little known... I'm sorry?
Go ahead. I have heard of it.
Okay, well, to me, I think it's almost like the Charge of the Light Brigade. It's a little forgotten, but Northern school children were required to memorize that, and it's a tribute to Sheridan, who's the New York general. You know, his monument is in front of our Capitol. So I just thought it might be a little lost item that could be recreated with this type of effort.
Well, you know, my dad knew the Sheridan's Ride by heart, and you bring up an important thing, you know, and it goes back to your earlier question about memorization, which is, in the 19th century, American school kids could recite speech upon speech of George Washington. They knew every aspect of George Washington's life. In fact, they knew where he slept. And so the joke in the 20th century, now even forgotten in the 21st century, is George Washington slept here, was sort of mocked. But it meant something in the 19th century, all of these things. It was connecting the populace to their history. And when you know where you've been, you can know a little bit better where you are, and you certainly then have an advantage as you move into that dark, unknown future. And that's why knowing the Gettysburg Address, that's why knowing these other great poems, that's why knowing our past, knowing our history is so critically important, not just for the sake of knowledge, but for the sake of us now and, more importantly, in the future.
We got a few more minutes with filmmaker Ken Burns, whose work on The Address you can find on WXXI-TV. His film will show Tuesday, April 15th. LearnTheAddress.org and WXXI.org, The Address, for you to share your own version. Bernard in Fairport, you're on with Ken Burns.
Hi. Ken Burns, your films are great. When I heard this Gettysburg and you involved, I said, what is this thing? And it seems to me that this idea of getting people involved is just so great, not just watching a film, but actually doing something. And as a grandfather, this is something I'm going to do with my grandchildren.
Fantastic.
And I hope that other people in other schools come up with these kinds of ideas, because it seems to me that that's what's missing in our system. We don't seem to have people getting engaged on things that may seem kind of a waste of time on one aspect, but they get people involved, and they create this. I don't know, motivation to do things. And it's just a great idea. Thanks very much, and I look forward to the show. Bye-bye.
I could not agree more. I mean, this is the heart of what's going on in our country right now. The late historian Arthur Schlesinger Jr. has said that we suffer today from too much pluribus and not enough unum. I've spent my entire professional life trying to address the unum, that is the one that comes out of the many, the Latin motto of the United States. And this is it. You know, we know, we catch it in glimpses when we're at a ballpark, as I said, in church, singing carols on the 4th of July, and we feel connected to those around us. And I think then we tend to, because of our media culture, look very suspiciously on the other, people who aren't from the same region, people who aren't of the same race, people who aren't of the same political persuasion. And because of the internet and the explosion of television channels where people get they get the news they want to hear, we lack that cohesion. And all it takes is a grandfather reciting with a son and a grandson, or a daughter and a granddaughter. My kids, I have four daughters, are doing it and learning it. It's very exciting, and it may not seem like a big thing, but I think when you step back, it's often these little things that mean most to us. I mean, we all have turkey on Thanksgiving, and we do it with our families, and you could say, yeah, and we do it every year. It's not the same thing. There's something very magical about the ordinary, and I think what we find is that if we focus our attention right, there's no ordinary moment. There are no ordinary people. We have the opportunity, as our faith, as our art, as our science tells us, to open up to new worlds.
Let's get to one more call for Ken Burns. It's David in Rochester. Go ahead, David.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Burns, what a thrill that you're on the radio. I have followed you for years. I think your project is absolutely exceptional, and there is nothing wrong with memorization, which a lot of people eschew, as long as it's attached to meaning, which you are doing. And I think it gives a chance for celebration of our values, of the people, for the people, by the people, but it also makes us think, how far away are we really from that, and where do we and what do we need to go to really get there? So I thank you, and I will be hanging with it. And I just wanted to ask you one thing. What are you doing to follow it up? Is it just memorizing the Gettysburg, or does your website have opportunities for follow-through in building an understanding of that critical speech?
It's a very good question. Thank you so much for that and for your kindness. We're not going to leave it at there. I formed a nonprofit a few years ago called the Better Angels Society, and I'll get to the Lincoln quote that's connected to in 1 second. But the idea was initially to help us in fundraising in tough economic times. As everyone who listens to public radio or public television knows, we depend on you and your help and assistance, and I'm no different and very grateful for all the support we do get from corporations and foundations and individuals and government granting agencies. But we also wanted to promote a civil discourse and civics understanding. And we see the Gettysburg Address as going public in a way that not only would we be engaged in fundraising efforts with the Better Angels Society, but also with appealing to just what the last caller was talking about, this sense of cohesion that we need to have. Now, the Better Angels Society comes from the last sentence of Lincoln's first inaugural, delivered on March 4th, 1861. The audience was mostly Southerners. He was imploring them, you know, we must not be enemies, we must be friends. Though passion may have strained, they must not break our bonds of affection. But then this poet president, who was still, you know, 2.5 years from delivering the Gettysburg Address, went on with one of the finest sentences ever written in the English language, I believe, or spoken in the English language. He said, "The mystic chords of memory, stretching from every battlefield and patriot grave to every living heart and hearthstone all over this broad land, will yet swell the chorus of the Union when again touched, as surely they will be, by the better angels of our nature."
Ken Burns, thanks for your time today. I have to tell you that in speaking to you and watching your films and in just hearing you talk about your films, there's one thing that you seem to lack that I think most of us have too much of, and that's cynicism. And you're maybe the least cynical person that I've encountered, and I think that's a tremendous credit to you.
That's very, very kind. I love my country, and we can all make it better if we don't armchair quarterback this, if we get involved, if we are passionate. Cynicism is an impossibility. Cynicism is a luxury of the idle. It's a luxury of judgment of the other and not of oneself. And, you know, when you invest in the glories of American history, when you read the poetry of Walt Whitman, do I contradict myself? I contradict myself. If you read the poetry and the speeches of Abraham Lincoln or Elizabeth Cady Stanton, for that matter, or read Mark Twain, you kind of imbibe an Americanism that doesn't require just knee-jerk patriotism, isn't just sort of sunshine patriotism, but is in fact a very complicated thing that requires whatever your political persuasion, wherever you are, whatever your financial situation is, all of us to participate. When you do that, cynicism just drops away. How could you possibly do that when you're faced with not only the glories of this past in all its complication, but the challenges of the present and the possibilities of the future? You know, let's just go on. We don't need this division anymore. We don't need this absence of compromise. That was our genius. I asked Shelby Foote, why did the Civil War happen? He said, we failed to do what we have a genius for. Americans like to think of themselves as uncompromising people, but our genius is for compromise. And when that broke down, look what happened.
Beautifully said. Now let's mark our calendars for Tuesday, April 15th on WXXI-TV to watch the address, and let's not wait. Let's go to WXXI.org/the address or learntheaddress.org to share your own versions. Ken Burns, thanks for the time today.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks so much. Good luck, everybody. Everybody has to memorize it now.
They're on it. They have their assignments. We're going to take a short break. When we come back in the last 15 minutes of the hour, you're going to hear a few more versions from learntheaddress.org that you can find there. We'll play those for you next. And we remind you as well, we ask you to go public. This is member-supported public radio, AM 1370, FM 91.5, and HD2 Rochester.
WXXI's Travel Club presents a 2014 holiday excursion sailing along the Danube to celebrate the season with old world style. Join us next December as we board a ship in Vienna, traveling through Austria and Germany, exploring castles, cathedrals, and the famed Christmas markets. Your trip includes airfare, accommodations, and meals. Early bird discounts now available. For more information, go public at WXXI.org/travel.
And welcome back to Connections with Evan Dawson here on AM 1370. And if you feel like I do, that was a tremendous hour with Ken Burns that we just spent learning about his new project called The Address. And what we want to do now is we'll certainly still take your calls, 263-WXXI, 263-9994, if you want to share your thoughts about that. We're going to hear a couple more versions of The Address, but might as well get to Bonnie in Rochester now. Before we do that, as long as Bonnie's still there. Are you there, Bonnie?
Yes, I am.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. I understand that you just had my mom reading the Gettysburg Address, or reading it.
I guess we did.
She's 100 years old.
Yes, that's right.
My son just called me. I'm sitting in a hospital waiting room where I am visiting a friend, and he just called me to tell me this and the number, and I wanted to call and say that's a great thing you're doing.
Well, thanks very much. And I know we're losing your phone a little bit there. It was in and out. But we did. We had your mother, 100 years old, reciting from memory the Gettysburg Address, which actually goes beautifully to Ken Burns' point, which is that if you learn it really from a young age, but if you learn it at any point, it stays with you. And one of his points was that the notion of rote memorization isn't a problem here, especially for children. Children may not fully grasp the gravity of the words that Lincoln spoke at Gettysburg, but they're going to remember the words, and as they get older and as they understand the world a little bit more, those words will start to break through from rote memorization into meaning. I mean, it happened with me. I remember memorizing Robert Frost's The Road Not Taken. I mean, that was just another one of the school projects, and years later, I understood exactly what that meant. I'm sure I did not at the time. So what a really neat and precious and beautiful idea that Ken Burns came up with here. Let's go ahead and listen to a few more here, some of Ken's suggestions from the homepage. This is Whoopi Goldberg doing the Gettysburg Address.
47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that this nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
That's the familiar voice of Whoopi Goldberg reciting the Gettysburg Address, which you can do right now at learntheaddress.org, but we invite you locally, if you're in the Rochester area with us, do it at wxxi.org/the address, and we have easy prompts and links there for you to upload your own video and do that. And I think if you spent the hour with Ken Burns with us today, you'll feel inspired to go ahead and do that. Just takes a few minutes. One more to share with you. In the next hour, we're going to get Andrew Cuomo's State of the State Address. Now let's hear his father, Mario, doing the Gettysburg Address.
47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that the nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, and we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note, nor long remember, what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task that remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they here gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
That's the voice of Mario Cuomo reading the Gettysburg Address. And Ken Burns, as he said in his hour with us here today, was able to convince, I don't even know how much he had to convince, political opponents, philosophical opponents. He cited Bill O'Reilly and Rachel Maddow, Marco Rubio and Nancy Pelosi, and so many others who, if you go to learntheaddress.org, you will see the diversity of well-known people who are on there reading the Gettysburg Address. And interesting to see their different takes on it as well. I mean, I'd say a different take on it, as if our interpretation is going to change the meaning of it. But everyone sort of presents it in a different way, has a different cadence and style. He cited Stephen Colbert, who we heard from the clip from earlier this hour, and Ken Burns saying he wholeheartedly approved of the humorous take Stephen Colbert gave it, not to demean or denigrate the Gettysburg Address, but just to have a little bit of fun and some comedy, which sometimes is needed to be inserted into a very heavy situation. We've also heard from some people on social media, and we're thrilled to be getting feedback on our Facebook page and on Twitter as well. Go to twitter.com/WXXINews or just Evan Dawson on Twitter. Same thing with Facebook, Evan Dawson on Facebook on the public page or WXXINews. Brandon Rankin said she thought it was a fantastic interview with Ken Burns today. Jamie Schneider writing that loved listening to Ken Burns on the show. Michelle as well, thanking us for the interview. And really, we thank Ken Burns for giving us the time today. If you missed the earlier part of the hour, we started the hour with the trailer for the address, about 2.5 minutes long. And that really tells you exactly the genesis of the project, why he's doing it, and what he'd like to do next with it. And if you missed that, you can go to learntheaddress.org. All kinds of ways there to check out some of the background, and you can see the trailer and get a better sense for exactly what this Lincoln's Gettysburg Address project is. But the one question that people have been asking is, when can they see it? Tuesday, April 15th. Tuesday, April 15th on WXXI, and we'll have a chance then to show you on our network, and we're thrilled to be able to do it on our air, what Ken Burns has been working on. A great passion project. Did you find it interesting, like I did, when he mentioned that early on when he was working on this, it was just himself and a couple of interns and they didn't have funding? I mean, maybe you're like me. You think that if Ken Burns calls, he gets the funding. He has the track record at this point that you would think that he would. He would say, I'm the guy who did the Civil War, or baseball, or jazz, or the war, or how many more? The Dust Bowl. There's probably about 36 projects he's done by now. But interesting to hear that Ken Burns still has to convince people that an idea is a good one. And it took a little time, but now things are really, really rolling. It's pretty remarkable stuff. So our thanks to Ken Burns for his time in the hour. Our thanks to you for your phone calls. And it was fun. Fun to listen to some of this. We're going to have a big change for the next hour as we get set for live coverage of the State of the State. But for now, we're just trying to soak up some of the wisdom we learned from Ken Burns. He sort of speaks in aphorism, doesn't he? It's almost like everything he says is really, really well thought out and constructed. Maybe he's learning from his idols that words don't need to be wasted. Really, really fun stuff with Ken Burns today. And a Rochester connection. Said his father's from Rochester. I did not know that. So maybe we'll convince him to come back soon. And if you wanted a chance to talk to him and didn't have a chance to get the call in today, or if we couldn't get to your call today, and I apologize for that, we'll do it again soon with Ken Burns. Take a quick break. More with you on member-supported public radio on AM 1370, FM 91.5, HD2 Rochester.